Episode number 3 of The Champion is brought to you by ShipStation and Stamps.com. You know that feeling you get when you can get things done with just the click of your mouse? It can't get any more convenient than that until we invent telepathy, which we don't have. So click of a mouse is the way it is. And now you can get your mailing and shipping done without leaving your desk. That's right. Park your booty in your office chair. And with Stamps.com, you can turn your PC or Mac into your personal post office that never closes. You buy and print official U.S. postage for any letter or package using your computer and printer, and then you just hand your mail to the mailman or drop it in a mailbox, and you never have to go to the delightful, lovely, wonderful-smelling place known as the post office ever again. We use Stamps.com to ship all of our merch. We'll be using Stamps.com to pay for the postage for the thousands of copies of The Champion that are going out on September 30th. And right now, you can use my last name, Sigler, for this special offer. A no-risk trial plus $110 in bonus goodies, including a digital scale that calculates your exact postage for letters and packages and up to 55 big ones in free postage. So don't wait! Go to Stamps.com before you do anything else, including breathing. Click on the microphone at the top of the homepage and type in Sigler. That is Stamps.com. Enter S-I-G-L-E-R. And now on with our story. Welcome to The Champion, Book 5 in the Galactic Football League series. Written and performed by author Scott Sigler. The Champion is suitable for ages 12 and up and contains graphic on-field violence. This novel, along with the first 4 books in the GFL series, is available as a full-length, unabridged, digital audiobook download from Audible, iTunes, and Amazon. As an ebook for Kindle, iPhone, iPad, Android, or any EPUB-compatible device, and in paperback. The Champion is also available as a signed, numbered, limited edition hardcover while supplies last. To order any version, go to scottsigler.com/store. Hello, junkies! It is September 28th. We are 2 days away from the street date of The Champion. Now, I bet you've got questions about the ebook, the audiobook, the hardcover, the paperback, etc. Will you get stuff for free? Will you not get stuff for free? What do you have to do? Did it get signed? So many questions. I'm not going to answer them here. Go to scottsigler.com. Look for our September 26th Friday fix. It'll be right on the page, right below episode number 3 of The Champion. Ariel Girl and I go over all of the questions you might have on your goodies, on your stuff, and we tickle your fancy in any number of ways. But if you want to participate in Hell Week, which is when a bunch of junkies get together and volunteer, which is crazy, but they do it. They volunteer to hang out with A&I for a couple of days and ship all the books to you other junkies. If you're local to the San Diego area, we need people for a 3-hour shift minimum. Got to be there for 3 hours so A can schedule it, because that's what A does. The Empress of Tetris needs to schedule things. You can come in any day next week. Just email info@emptyset.com and we'll give you the details. And we'll also probably give you beer if you're of legal drinking age. After the episode, I'm going to talk a little bit about GFL t-shirts and what is coming up next. Stick around for that. And if you listen, you will hear how you, junkie, can be involved in that process. As I mentioned, we are shipping out all the copies of The Champion using postage bought from Stamps.com, but we are using our other sponsor, ShipStation, to send out a bunch of those. So let me tell you about ShipStation. We sell online. If you're selling online, you know that getting your orders out the door quickly can be tough. That's why ShipStation is the fast and easy way to manage and ship all of your orders all in one place. With ShipStation, you'll be shipping out more in less time. Doesn't matter if you sell on eBay, Amazon, Etsy, or from more than 50 other popular marketplaces and shopping carts, because ShipStation brings all your orders into one place, making it easy to manage so you can spend less time shipping and more time making stuff that people buy so you can do more shipping. What's the opposite of vicious cycle? It's a delicious cycle. With ShipStation.com, you easily create shipping labels using all the top carriers like UPS, FedEx, UPS. It's no wonder that ShipStation is the number one choice of online sellers with an incredible 98% customer satisfaction rating. And right now, you can try ShipStation free for 30 days. Plus, you can get an additional month free only if you use my last name, Sigler. So don't wait. Go to ShipStation.com before you do anything else and click on the podcast button at the top of the homepage and type in Sigler. That is ShipStation.com. Enter S-I-G-L-E-R. Oh, a quick happy birthday to Carl Gardner from Liverpool in the UK. His birthday is on the 15th, but screw it. Happy birthday now, Carl. Let me get you guys caught up on where we are in the champion, and then we're going to get into it. Previously on The Champion. We are still just hours after the Galaxy Bowl, and Quentin needs to get away quietly to search for his missing sister Janine and his friend Fred. Missal the Efficient showed unexpected mettle in setting up Quentin's search for his sister. Quentin waits in the locker room while Missal organizes the trip. It's time for Quentin to sneak away undetected, if he can. And now, The Champion, episode number 3. Chapter 4, Quarterbacks. Quentin was the last one to leave the locker room. Even 7 hours after the game, with night fading into morning, there was still sentience who had waited for a chance to see him, to take a picture with him, or record his thumbprint, to get some tiny piece of the Galaxy Bowl MVP that they would remember all their lives. As he had done back on McCovey in his Tier 3 days, Quentin answered each request. He signed, he smiled, he posed, he thumbed message boards, he said thank you over and over to the starstruck well-wishers. And as he did this, his teammates quietly slipped away, one by one, heading for the stadium's loading dock, where Missal had told them to gather. Finally, when there was but a handful of sentience left, Missal came for him and pulled him aside. He quietly handed Quentin an access card and gave him instructions. Exit the locker room into the main player entry corridor. Turn right at the hall between the home and visitors' locker rooms. Look for a blue service elevator. Use the access card to take the elevator straight down to the loading dock. Find a ground truck where everyone else was waiting to depart.
Time is of the essence, Elder Barnes,
Missal said.
The ship leaving Hitone will not wait. If the ground truck is late, the ship leaves without you.
I'm going, Quentin said. Just a few more minutes.
He returned to the waiting fans and rushed through the final autographs and thumbprints. These sentients had waited for hours, and a few had probably spent some, if not all, of their savings on outrageously priced Galaxy Bowl tickets and hotel rooms for this once-in-a-lifetime opportunity. He wanted to make sure they all got that extra bit of satisfaction. Missal shifted from foot to foot, as he always did, when timelines were in danger of slipping, a motion that Quentin always thought of as the pee-pee dance.
Elder Barnes, we are only 34 seconds ahead of schedule. Time to go.
After the final autograph, a t-shirt labeled INF Krakens, Galaxy Bowl 27 Champions, Quentin pulled his suit coat from his locker, slipped it on, then walked across the empty locker room as Missal guided the last stragglers out another door. Quentin exited into the main corridor. He walked toward the visitors' locker room. Before and after the game, this place had been an insane hive of buzzing activity. Now it was quiet as a tomb. He saw one human worker hurry past, going in the other direction. A small man, wearing a stadium staff jacket, little different in size and demeanor than the random Quith worker who would have been probably doing a similar random job back in Ionath Stadium. The same work had to be done everywhere you went. The only difference was the species that did it. Up on the right, Quentin saw the hallway that separated the home and visitors' locker rooms. He was just about to turn down it and head for the elevator when a door to the visitors' locker room opened up. Out stepped Don Pine. He wore a tailored suit, the dark purple complementing his blue skin. He looked every bit like the elite Tier 1 quarterback that he was. He saw Quentin, and smiled.
Imagine meeting you here, Don said. The Galaxy Bowl MVP stayed late to sign some final autographs?
Quentin nodded, already conscious of the delay this was causing.
You got it. And you?
The locker room door opened again. Three human kids ran out, all wearing gold, silver, and copper Jupiter Jacks jackets. A man came out behind them.
Thanks again, Mr. Pine, the man said. You have no idea what this means to them.
Don gave an easy wave.
My pleasure.
The man nodded one last thank you, then chased after the screaming kids. Quentin watched the four of them run down the hall. He noticed that two of the kids ran awkwardly, like they barely had enough strength in their legs to support the out-of-control joy that came with meeting a hero. Quentin nodded after them.
Those kids okay?
Don sighed.
Oh, not really. Meeting me was kind of their last wish.
Last? You mean they're dying?
Don nodded. Quentin felt a hammer of loss for the kids. So happy, so young. But whatever ailed them was beyond even the staggering abilities of modern science.
That's really good of you, Don.
The blue-skinned quarterback smiled ruefully, then shrugged.
I got a bit of karma to make up for, doing what I can while I'm still in the game.
He offered his left hand to Quentin.
Kid, what you did out there tonight, people are going to remember that forever.
Quentin looked at Pine's hand. The left, because Pine remembered that Quentin had sacrificed his right pinky to stay in the game. Quentin shook.
Thanks, he said. It means a lot coming from you, old man. But don't think this squares it up between us.
Don laughed.
The rage of youth. I tell you what, kid. Spend the next week looking at your MVP trophy. Then the week after that, staring at the ring that will be on your finger. Then tell me how important all that other stuff is.
All that other stuff. The Galaxy had blamed Quentin for throwing games that Pine had thrown, and the man called it all that other stuff. Sentience had thought Quentin a cheater, that he threw games. They'd thrown garbage at him. Yes, that other stuff was still important. And yet, without Pine's help, would Quentin have even made it through the first season? Without the need to save Pine from his gambling debts, would Quentin have overcome his own racism to unify the team or become the leader that he now was? Sentience washed out of the GFL all the time. Without Pine, both the good and the bad, Quentin might very well have wound up just another forgotten player. He would never know. What Quentin did know was that Pine had had a chance to come clean, and Pine had passed on that chance. He'd hung Quentin out to dry. Pine could say all the nice things he liked, make all the kind gestures he liked. Quentin didn't have to punch the man on sight, but being pleasant in public wasn't the same as forgiveness. For what Pine had done, Quentin would never forgive the man.
Don, I gotta go. You had a great game, too. And thanks for presenting the MVP trophy. That was really classy.
Don nodded.
Needed to be done. Take care of yourself, Quentin.
He looked over Quentin's shoulder.
Great game, Virac.
Thank you,
said the growling voice a few feet behind Quentin. Quentin's stomach sank. Oh, crap. Don walked off down the hall. Quentin turned to face Virac the Mean, the Kraken's Quith Warrior outside linebacker, and Greedock's main bodyguard. The single, baseball-sized eye stared out, the cornea clear.
Barnes, Greedock sent me to make sure you made it safely to the touchback.
Time was ticking away.
Thanks, Virac, but I'll make my own way back.
Incorrect,
the linebacker said.
You are coming with me now.
Quentin's anger bubbled up, percolated, hovered just below an all-out boil. The warrior had picked the wrong time to be a badass.
What are you going to do, Virac? Beat me up and take me back by force?
Virac's eye swirled with yellow-orange, betraying his excitement.
I would enjoy that very much.
The linebacker stepped closer. Quentin caught himself before he took an automatic step back.
He couldn't show any weakness. He stared down at the shorter sentient, trying to be as intimidating as he could. Quentin was over a half foot taller, although the two sentients weighed about the same. The color on Virek's cornea swirled faster. He didn't seem all that intimidated.
"I have not forgotten about your disrespect to Torba the Hungries," he said. "Chodo isn't here to help you this time. Neither is John Tweedy."
Virek must have been lurking around this whole time. Quentin hadn't seen him. The warrior probably didn't know about Quentin's sister and the plan to get off Hitone, but right now, that didn't matter. Quentin had to get to that truck.
"You really want to fight me, Virek? Won't Greedock be mad if you bust up his star quarterback?"
Virek's eye swirls shifted from orange to black.
"You have the entire off-season to recover," he said. "I might be punished, but it'll be worth it."
Quentin had spent all of his childhood and most of his teenage years in the mines of Makovey. There, if you didn't know how to fight, you went hungry because other miners took your food. If you wanted to live, you learned how to fight. More importantly, Quentin had learned when to fight. Learned the difference between a man who knew how to look dangerous and one who could actually hurt you. Virek was the latter. Quentin knew he wasn't going to talk his way out of this one. His violent childhood had taught him something else. The guy who punches first usually wins. He stepped forward and brought his knee up fast for a quick strike to Virak's sternum. Virek twisted sharply to the right, and Quentin's knee slid harmlessly across Virak's chest, momentum carrying Quentin into Virak's already swinging left pedipalp. The chitin-covered fist slammed into Quentin's cheek, knocking him sideways so hard his head smashed into the corridor wall. Quentin had taken harder punches, but not many. He pushed off the wall and lunged at Virek. The warrior hadn't expected Quentin to react that quickly, to move that quickly, and went down hard under Quentin's weight. The two sentients hit the floor and skidded across the polished surface. Quentin straddled Virek, reached back to rain down blows, but felt Virek's powerful middle arms tangle in his suit coat and yank hard to the right. Cloth ripped, but didn't come free, and Quentin's mouth and nose slammed into the wall. His vision blurred. He hesitated for a second, only a second, and suddenly he was flat on his face, 360 pounds on his back, strong pedipalp arms locking under his throat.
"I used to be a professional fighter,"
Virek said as he slowly squeezed tighter, cutting off Quentin's air, cutting off the blood to his brain.
"Did you know that? I fought Korak the Cutter."
Quentin tried to lurch to the side, but he was already weakening. And Virek blocked the move. The warrior had him.
"I made it through the first round,"
Virek said.
"Not many sentients can say they made it a round with Korak the Cutter."
Quentin's eyes opened and shut. He couldn't breathe. Virek was going to kill him.
"You need a lesson,"
the warrior said.
"You need to learn that Greedock the Splithead is your Shamaketh, and I am the fist that punishes anyone stupid enough to—"
Quentin heard a sharp, short, sizzling sound. A crack, felt the sting of electricity, then the pressure on his neck eased away. Another crack. The weight fell off his back a second before he heard Virek flop limply against the hallway's hard floor. The big warrior didn't move. Quentin pushed himself to his butt, leaned his back against the wall. He took in big, ragged breaths, trying to get his wind back. There stood Masal the Efficient, uniform as neat and tidy as ever. He held the black device in his right pedipalp hand.
"I told you we were on a schedule,"
he said, bouncing from foot to foot.
"Get up, Quentin. Hurry to the loading dock before the truck leaves."
Quentin nodded, which made his throat hurt. He tasted blood in his mouth. He had to lean against the wall to stand up. He pointed down at the prone, unmoving Virek.
What about him?
"I will say I found him here, unconscious. Before that, I must find someone I can bribe to alter security footage of this incident so that I am not seen attacking Greedock's favorite bodyguard. And I must do both of those things in the 5 minutes before Vyrak wakes up. Every second you stand here makes it less probable I will succeed. So go!
Quentin nodded, turned, and ran down the hall, looking for the blue service elevator. He felt warmth trickling down his face. A quick touch came back bloody. Great. He reached the elevator. The access card let him in. The trip down finally gave him a few seconds to gather himself. He looked at his expensive tailored coat. Torn, spotted with blood, ruined. His upper lip had split. His cheek streamed blood. And that stinging in his mouth, it felt like, oh no, not again. He felt a small bit of hardness under his tongue, deep on the right side. He slid a finger in there, felt it, pulled it out. A front tooth. The stinging in his mouth and the tip of his tongue told him it was the right one.
Why is it always that tooth?
The elevator stopped. As the doors opened, he slid the tooth into his pocket. Not 10 feet from the elevator sat a ground truck, back door rolled up, his teammates waiting inside. John, Jew, Becca, Kimberlin, Chodo, Crazy George, Tara the Freak, Denver, Milford, Doc Patah, and the long, frightening form of Mumo Killowee. They looked at him, instantly worried. Jew held a box full of hot dogs. John had half of a hot dog in each hand, the other halves, obviously, in his overstuffed mouth. Mumo let out a rumbling growl. Chodo's eye flooded black, but Becca was the first out of the truck and by Quentin's side.
Q, what happened?
Just a little post-game hug from Vyrak, Quentin said. We need to get going, fast.
Chodo guided Quentin to the truck.
It is my fault,
the warrior said.
I should never leave you unguarded.
John's face wrinkled with rage. He chewed fast, trying to process his giant bites of hot dog.
I'm not whooping his ass,
John said.
John's mad, Jew said. He said he's going to whip Vyrak's ass.
Thanks for the translation, Quentin said.
He climbed in.
Let's worry about that later. If we fall any further behind schedule, I think we have more to fear from Missal than Vyrak.
Becca climbed in after him, a white tissue in her hand as if it had appeared out of nowhere.
Missal, she said. Why would we worry about him?
Quentin winced as she dabbed at the cut on his cheek.
You don't want to know. Seal up the truck and let's get out of here.
Chodo got in. Jew pulled the truck door down. Quentin heard the latch lock. Seconds later, the truck started rolling. Quentin and his teammates endured the uncomfortable ride to the Hitone Intergalactic Spaceport. Early morning traffic made for frequent stops and starts, jostling the big bodies around in the smelly, dirty truck, sliding them against each other on the narrow bench seats. Mumo didn't bother with a seat. Instead, the 12-foot-long sentient lay on the floor, curled into a dense, muscly spiral. 8 hours since the game had ended, yet Quentin heard occasional yells and hollers from die-hard revelers who were still celebrating the Galaxy Bowl. He could only imagine how crazy the city of Hitone must have been right after the game. The teammates in the truck had missed all of that, because they'd been there for him, watching the holo from Fred Janine, then consoling him, then plotting with him, then sneaking out of the city before Greedock found out what was going on. His friends were joining him on a long journey that could put all their lives at risk. Quentin had to say something.
I appreciate this. What you're doing for me, for my sister, I can't thank you enough.
Simple nods or grunts of acknowledgement were all the answer he got. Except, of course, for the two Scalorno on board.
Adventure,
Milford said. Denver hopped up and down, her amazing balance making her impervious to the truck's random turns.
Love, love, love,
she said.
Godling, sibling, and Quentin, and love, love, love.
Maybe the two receivers didn't really understand the danger involved, but everybody else did. Quentin saw Becca looking at him. He met her gaze. She smiled. Don't worry, Quentin, she said. We'll find Janine.
The others looked down at the floor. They didn't share Becca's high hopes. They all thought Fred and Janine were dead, and yet they were coming along anyway. He would have done the same for any of them, done it without a thought, but they were doing it for him. He couldn't process it. It made him blush. It made him feel embarrassed. Quentin caught himself as the truck suddenly angled up sharply, then leveled out, then stopped. He heard new noises from outside the truck's thin walls. The heavy, hydraulic whine of blast doors shutting. The truck's rear door rolled up. There stood Manny Sayed and a thick human wearing grunge-spotted coveralls. Beyond them was the dinged and dented loading bay of what looked to be a cargo ship. Just behind Manny lay a pile of stuffed black canvas duffel bags.
"Welcome aboard the Burly Brown," Manny said.
He tilted his head toward the crew member.
Wait, what happened to your tooth?
Quentin had tuned out the stinging sensation.
I lost it in the game.
I saw you after the game, Manny said. You still had it then.
Quentin shrugged.
I slept in the locker room. You were saying?
Manny patted the crew member on the back.
This is Captain Nilsson. He's agreed to take you where you're going.
Nilsson nodded.
Mr. Barnes, happy to have you aboard. We're not a passenger ship, so I need to know you'll make sure you and yours understand who is in charge here.
And that would be you?
Nilsson nodded again.
The one and only. I'm responsible for our regular cargo and the safety of my crew. I call the shots. You understand?
Sure, Quentin said. We'll behave.
Nilsson leaned close to Manny and whispered something. Manny nodded.
Yeah, that's fine.
Without another word, Nilsson walked off. Quentin started to climb out of the truck, but Manny held up a hand.
Not all of you can come, he said. This ship is under Purest Nation registry. Since it will be going through the Purest Nation to get you to your rendezvous point, it could be stopped and boarded by system police at any time. I tried to arrange an interspecies ship, but could not on such short notice.
Quentin realized there were only 6 duffel bags in that pile. He felt saddened and partially relieved at the same time. At least some of his friends would live to see the next season.
Bummer,
John said. He hopped out of the truck.
Mega bummer,
Ju said, and did the same. Chodo started to get out, but Quentin stopped him.
It's a purist ship, Chodo,
Quentin said.
That means only human crew.
Manny pointed to Kimberlyn.
The heavy G, he can come. But I've already arranged transportation to the touchback for the rest of them.
Chodo's clear cornea instantly swirled with black.
There is room on this ship for me.
He glared at Manny.
There is room for me to come along and protect Quentin.
The warrior wasn't asking a question. He was issuing an order. Issuing a threat, more accurately. Chodo was already so much bigger and taller than Manny. From the back of the truck, the linebacker looked like a god of war that might step down and kill Manny with one chitinous foot. Quentin put a hand on the warrior's middle arm.
Chodo, take it easy. It's not up to Manny.
It is,
Chodo said.
I promise you, Quentin, this ship can smuggle sentience as well as cargo. If we are stopped and searched by Purest Nation system police, there is a place to put me so I won't be found. Correct me if I'm wrong, Elder Sand.
The fat man was starting to sweat.
Well, we might have room for one one non-human.
He looked at Quentin, his eyes pleading.
But only one. I give you my word.
I thought so,
Chodo said. Quentin looked down at Manny, looked hard, judged him, decided the businessman was telling the truth. There was room for one non-human only.
Chodo, you have to stay, Quentin said.
He pointed to Doc Patah.
Doc, get out. You're coming with us.
The hurrah fluttered from the truck. Chodo's cornea swirled with purple. That color could mean confusion or anguish. And in this case, it probably meant both.
Quentin, I must come,
Chodo said.
This mission is dangerous. You need me there with you.
Not that long ago, it seemed, Greedock had ordered a reluctant Chodo to act as Quentin's bodyguard. The warrior's loyalties had gradually shifted until he declared Quentin as his Shamakath, his leader, not Greedock. John, Jew, and the others were coming on this trip because of love and loyalty, sure. But for Chodo, protecting his Shamakath was in his DNA, was the focal point of a warrior's reason for being. The hard call. Deciding who to cut from the squad. Sending Yitzhak off the field in favor of Becca. Sometimes, the needs of the situation won out over loyalty, over raw emotion. Quentin would never get used to making calls like this, but it had to be done.
Chodo, we're going after my sister and Fred, Quentin said. If they're injured, having Doc along could be the difference between life and death, not just for them, but for the rest of us as well.
The swirls on Chodo's cornea expanded, quickened, flooding his eye a deep purple. He was devastated. Doc Patah fluttered back, a brave gesture considering Chodo's agitated state.
There is also the issue of Quentin's finger,
the hurrah said.
That ridiculous missing tooth I can fix easily, but I need to monitor his finger and prep it for replacement, although not while on this filthy ship, I assure you. Or it could mean long-term complications for his nervous system. If Quentin is to play quarterback next season, Chodo, I need to get at his hand as soon as possible. Waiting for him to return could be too late.
The fight seemed to drain out of Chodo. His body sagged.
I understand, he said.
The warrior shuffled to the back of the truck, pushed past Milford and Denver, sat heavily next to Terah the Freak. The misshapen Terah hadn't even stood up, but he seemed agitated. Mumo still lay on the floor. As far as Quentin could tell, the key hadn't moved a muscle. Quentin stepped down out of the truck and onto the ship's deck. There were dozens of ground trucks already aboard, dinged and dirty, parked in neat rows. The cargo hold itself looked filthy, speckled with rust, chipped paint, and even globs of grease that seemed to serve no purpose. Manny grinned.
A far cry from the touchback spotless shuttle bay, eh, Quentin? The Burly Brown is a cargo container ship, not quite as fancy as you're used to.
Quentin looked around the dingy hold. Dirty, but orderly and efficient.
I don't care how it looks. All I care about is that it's punch capable and can get us where we need to go.
Actually, the Brown isn't punch capable, Manny said. It'll reach orbit around Wilson 6, where it will dock in an open slot of the Fast Prince Somdet, a cargo supercarrier, which has slots for 45 cargo container ships. Somdet runs a regular route between planets. When a container ship reaches its destination, it disembarks, delivers its payload, picks up a new shipment, then returns to dock in another supercarrier for the next leg. It's cheaper for the individual ships to pay a part of a punch recharge than have to have punch drives of their own.
Manny gestured to the lines of the tightly packed trucks.
The Burly Brown is delivering a fleet of used ground trucks, among other cargo, to Mason and the Purest Nation. That's where Masal told me to send you.
Quentin had been to Mason many times in his PNFL career. One of his home system's four major planets, it was the farthest one away from the galactic core. If Bumberpuff wanted a rendezvous point on the edge of civilization, Mason fit the bill nicely. There were no known routes from Mason into the cloud, at least none that didn't take days and pass through the territory of multiple governments. But Quentin knew Bumberpuff must have a plan to account for that. Another route, perhaps. Maybe one only known to the Prowat.
You and your friends must stay in this vessel for the entire trip, Manny said. I know you need to remain anonymous, so don't let your people, especially the Tweety brothers, exit onto the Somdet. I've paid the Burly's crew to stay quiet about who's on board, but the Somdet crew is another story. They'll recognize GFL players, and word will get out.
Quentin nodded. If word got out, that word would undoubtedly reach Greedock. Becca and George hopped down, stood next to Quentin. Denver and Milford also exited, graceful and light-footed as ever. They leaned forward, just about to start a sprint around the loading bay, when Quentin scooted in front of them.
Oh, hold on, ladies. You have to go to the touchback with Chodo, Tara, and Mumo.
Adventure?
Denver said.
Fun, fun, fun? Kill, kill, fight, fight?
Milford said.
Go team?
Quentin shook his head.
Not this time. Go to your home planets. Enjoy the time off. I'll see you in training camp when the preseason hits.
Denver's eye stalks twitched, two of them looking at Quentin, two at Denver.
Oh!
Denver said.
I understand. The Godling wishes us to return to Dynasty Space to spread the Godling's gospel.
Milford started prancing in place.
Yes! Love, love, love to spread the gospel of Quentin Barnes, Quentin Barnes, Quentin Barnes, Quentin Barnes!
Quentin didn't need this. Not now. Explaining what he really meant might take hours, and he didn't have hours.
Whatever, he said. I'll see you when this is over.
When the Sklarno got back into the truck, Tara the Freak got out. The warrior ignored Quentin, walked to Crazy George Starcher.
George, you should come back with me,
Tara said. Crazy George smiled.
It's okay. I will be fine.
This isn't football,
Tara said.
This isn't one of your visions. Your life will be in danger.
George nodded.
I know what it means, my friend. I'd be dead already if it wasn't for Quentin and for you. Debts like that can only be repaid in kind.
Tara shot a glance at Quentin. A distrusting, suspicious, one-eyed glance. Did Tara think Quentin was using the others? Maybe the only reason the Freak had come along was to protect George, not to help Quentin find his sister. Tara turned back to his friend.
Do what you have to do, George, and remember to take your meds.
I will, George said.
Tara returned to the truck. He stopped next to Quentin, spoke quietly, so only Quentin could hear.
Make sure he comes back in one piece,
the warrior said quietly.
If you don't, you'll answer to me. And he never remembers to take his meds. You make sure that he does.
Tara kept his cornea clear of all color, but Quentin sensed the anger pouring off him. The warrior couldn't hide all of his tells. Quentin had become too skilled at detecting emotions for that.
I'll make sure, Quentin said. Everyone is coming back safe. I promise.
Tara's long pedipalps twitched. He didn't believe Quentin. The warrior climbed into the truck. Quentin turned to Manny.
I guess we're all set. Thank you.
Then I'll leave you to your folly, Manny said.
He pointed at the Tweety brothers, who were busy scooping grease globs off the floor and flinging them at each other, laughing like little kids. Becca watched them, shaking her head in amazement. Manny sighed.
Cargo container A113 is full of beer. I hope it's enough to keep those idiots occupied.
They're my brothers, Quentin said. Don't call them idiots.
A voice over the cargo ship's speakerphone drew Quentin's attention.
This is Captain Nilsson. If our fancy new guests could kindly make their way to the crew lounge, we'll be underway. The loading dock is a working area, and we are working. Stay out of our way, and we'll have no problems.
The crew lounge is small, but it's yours for the trip, Manny said.
He bowed.
I will take my leave. Whatever your quest, Quentin, I wish you luck.
He closed the truck's rear door, moving with a precision that showed he hadn't always been a fat, rich man. Once upon a time, Manny Sayed had worked for a living. He walked to the truck's passenger door, artificial foot clonking in time. He climbed in. The Burly's loading ramp lowered only long enough for the truck to drive out, then rose again, sealing the ship tight. Becca nudged Quentin.
Come on, Q. Let's get to the lounge.
He looked at her heavy black hair, her broad shoulders, and solid arms. She was all in, ready to help him find Janine, ready to do whatever it took. At 6'6", Becca Montaigne towered over almost every human man, even some heavy G-men, but she still had to tilt her head up slightly to look into Quentin's eyes. His thoughts swam in those eyes, and for a moment, a sweet moment, he didn't think about his sister. But Becca had family, too, her mother and father, who had been at the Galaxy Bowl to watch their daughter's crowning moment. Quentin felt a new wash of guilt as he realized she had spent nearly every minute after the game with him, not with them.
"Did you get a chance to say hi to your mom and dad?"
She nodded. "A few minutes, sure." He winced. Her expression changed from eagerness to sympathy. "It's fine," she said. "Honest, it's our way. If my parents knew why I had to leave so soon, they'd want me to go. They'd do the same for someone that they... for someone important to them. I'm here for you, Quentin." He had to tell her how he felt. He had to. She was putting her life on the line for him. But what should he say? How should he say it? He had to...
"This is the captain making a second request for guests to move to the crew lounge. A second polite request. The third request involves stun guns and duct tape. Yes, you are all quite large, but there are more of us, and you will be unpleasantly surprised at the sheer volume of duct tape that we have on board."
Quentin looked around. Even the Tweety brothers were gone. Becca lightly pushed him toward the hatch that led out of the cargo bay.
"We can chat later," she says. "Move, Q. I don't know about you, but I'm not that fond of stun guns."
Again, he had lost his moment. He'd just have to bide his time. Surely, he'd have a little privacy with her on the trip to the Portath Cloud, and then, if he could gather up the courage, he would tell her that he loved her. That was The Champion, episode number 3. I think you guys can see this is shaping up to be a pretty interesting predicament for Quentin and company, and things are going to get real dicey real quick. A lot of super fun stuff coming in the next 5, 6, 7 episodes, and I hope that you guys enjoy it. Now, before the episode, I told you that after the episode, I would talk to you about GFL t-shirts. Junkies, good news, bad news. Good news, bad news. The good news is we're running out of t-shirts for the INF Krakens and the Orbiting Death and a few others. The bad news is we're running out of t-shirts for the Krakens, the Orbiting Death, and a few others. The good news part of the bad news is that means it is time to start thinking about the next GFL t-shirts. We're going to do a brand new Krakens tee, of course, and we will retire the one that's currently up at scottsigler.com/store, just like we have retired the Property of Krakens t-shirt. Can't get those anymore. This new orange and black one will go by the wayside, and we will get it replaced, hopefully with a cool two-color shirt. We'll get Scott Pond working on that, and it's going to be awesome. But there's room to enter a new team into the t-shirts. To give you a heads up, we have sold out of, or as we call it in our football parlance, we have retired the jerseys of Property of INF Krakens, Wabash Wolfpack, and Toe Pirates. We completely sold out of all of those shirts. That was those were some of our original shirts. They're gone. You can't get them anymore. And we still have the Sheb Stalkers, Y'all Criminals, Buddha City Elite, and ISIS Ice Storm GFL team t-shirts, which you can get at scottsigler.com/store. Some of those have a decent amount of inventory. Some don't. We have inventory numbers listed over there if you want to go take a look and see if your size is available. So, the big question, who is next? Or what is next? It doesn't necessarily have to be a GFL team t-shirt like we had the awesome... Keep Calm and Run the Plays that I call. That was a fan idea that we brought to life, slapped on a shirt and pushed it into your face and then took your money away in exchange. So it could be a team t-shirt. There's a ton of teams still in GFL, a lot of popular teams. Maybe you guys want to suggest a particular team that you would like to see. It could be a GFL-related shirt that isn't team-specific, or it could be just about anything else. What we want is your thoughts. Now, it can't be one of the teams we've already done or that we have. So I need no suggestions for INF Krakens, Wabash Wolfpack, Toe Pirates, Sheb Stalkers, Y'all Criminals, Buddha City Elite, or ISIS Ice Storm. Don't mention any of those. Any other team or any other ideas are fine. So what I'm going to ask you to do is, if you're interested in being a part of this process, if you want to give us your 2 cents worth, go to the show notes for Champion episode number 3 at scottsigler.com and tell us what you would like in the comments. You can just say, I want the Bartell Waterbugs. And that's fine. If you want to give us a reason for your idea and why you think people would buy it, because this is a commercial endeavor, people. I am a capitalist. We are making shirts to push them in your faces. And while you are confused with the cotton poly blend all up in your eyes, we reach behind and pull out that wallet, or we slip a hand into your purse, or however you carry your money, and we take it away from you. That's what we do. But you do wind up with a really cool shirt and permanent vision damage. Totally beside the point. So get thee over to scottsigler.com. Look for the Champion episode 3. Log in. And if you don't have a profile, create a profile. Where the activity in the site has been blowing up recently. Getting a lot of cool exchanges, conversations, interactions going with the fans. Me and the fans, between the fans. Sign up with a profile. Get in there in the comments and tell us what you would like to see in the realm of a new t-shirt. A new Siglerism t-shirt. What we'll do is we'll go through the comments on the Champion episode number 3, and A and I will look at what ideas we think are cool. We'll see if something shows up repeatedly, if there's a particular team people want, etc. Then we'll make a short list. We will make a short list based on our evaluation criteria, and then we'll put that short list up sometime in the future as a poll. So then you as a junkie and all the junkies will have the opportunity to come in and pick which t-shirt will be next. That's because we make cool t-shirts, not jackass t-shirts like Abercrombie and Fitch, just desperate for attention and free publicity. If I wanted free publicity, we would just make a t-shirt, which is a photocopy of my butt, and I would put that on the t-shirt, and then people could go wear it, and there would be outrageousness, and people would get all upset, but I would get coverage. We're not like that. We make really cool t-shirts that are just about the GFL or about Siglerism. And possibly my photocopied butt, but I haven't got a real girl to sign off on that one just yet. So get over to scottsigler.com, Champion episode number 3. Give me your ideas and what you would like to see in the next team t-shirt. We're shipping out the Champion! We're shipping out the Champion! Holy crap, we're 2 days away from getting that process started. The books are in, the giant palette of books. Oh my God, it's so awesome. 2 years in the making. 2 years since I could continue the tales of the GFL, follow Quentin's quest, and you guys are finally going to get it, and we really could not be more excited. Could not be more excited. Hope you guys are going to dig the book. By the time I do the Champion episode number 4, many of those books will be on their way to your faces and to your ears, and hopefully we'll be getting feedback and see if you guys dug it or not. But that is it for this week. We will be back next week with the Champion episode number 4. Your Champion hardcovers are almost in the mail to you. If you don't have one, scottsigler.com/thechampion. Don't forget to request an inscription. And we will talk to you all real soon.
You have been listening to The Champion, Book 5 in the Galactic Football League series, written and performed by author Scott Sigler, produced by A. Kovacs, and engineered by Steve Rickyberg. For more information on the author and for more free stories, go to scottsigler.com. Theme music is the song Heaven's a Lie by the band Lacuna Coil.